sci-fi movies got better and better in the 80s and the 90s after the original Star Wars movie. Some of you folks remember the Blade Runner, the Terminator, Aliens, Jurassic Park, Star Trek, Total Recall, and so on. Great special effects, stunning visuals, great entertainment. Basically, you go to the cinema, you take your seat and turn off your brain, and for 2 hours, you can forget all about your worries. And then in 1999, this movie came out. The Matrix instantly became a blockbuster. It was different. It was different in a way that it actually helps you, it makes you think. It generated a buzz, and it was asking the most basic existential questions, like, what is real? Who are we? Why are we here? And what is our purpose? And how do we live out that purpose? Its main character, Neo, lives a normal, boring kind of life. He's a programmer. Neo doesn't know it, but he actually lives inside a computer-simulated world called the Matrix. Everything that he sees and tastes and smells and feels and touches is being fed to him by a machine. He was trapped in it all his life. Although he feels that something seems to be wrong, he has no idea what it is. And then one day, Neo meets two individuals who have come into the Matrix from the outside world, Morpheus and Trinity. They sneaked into the Matrix to find Neo. An opportunity was presented to Neo to find out the truth for himself. But he needs to make a decision. And we come to this famous scene. Morpheus holds a blue pill and a red pill in his hands, and he said, "This is your last chance, Neo. You take the blue pill, you go back to your old life, you wake up in the bed and, you know, believe whatever you want to believe, and you take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. All I'm offering you is a chance to see it for yourself." And Neo took the red pill. He got pulled out of the machine world and enters into the reality, the real world, where Morpheus explains to him what the Matrix is. It is a computer-generated simulation enslaving the entire human race. People's bodies are trapped inside incubators. Their body heat is used to generate energy to feed the machine, to give them energy. That's bad. But then Morpheus tells him the real deal. The reason why they came into the Matrix to get him to bring Neo out is because they believe he is the one. Neo is going to save the human race. He is the one who will defeat the machine and liberate humanity from the Matrix. Of course, Neo is confused. So in order to convince him, Morpheus offers to take him to see the Oracle. Now, the Oracle is a prophet. She seems to know more about the future than most people. She can tell Neo who he really is and what he is supposed to do. So I want to show you this clip where Neo would meet the Oracle for the first time.
"You know why Morpheus brought you to see me. So, what do you think? Do you think you are the one?"
"Honestly, I don't know."
"You know what that means? It's Latin. It means know thyself. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Being the one is just like being in love. No one can tell you you're in love. You just know it. Through and through. Balls to bones. Well, I better have a look at you. Open your mouth. Say ah."
"Ah."
"Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I'm supposed to say, that's interesting, but then you say...
But what?
But you already know what I'm going to tell you.
I'm not the one.
Sorry, kid. You got the gift. But it looks like you're waiting for something.
What?
Your next life, maybe. Who knows? That's the way these things go. What's funny?
Morpheus. He almost had me convinced.
I know. Poor Morpheus. Without him, we're lost.
What do you mean, without him?
Are you sure you want to hear this? Morpheus believes in you, Neo. And no one, not you, not even me, can convince him otherwise. He believes it so blindly that he's going to sacrifice his life to save yours.
What?
You're going to have to make a choice. In the one hand, you'll have Morpheus's life. And in the other hand, you'll have your own. One of you is going to die. Which one will be up to you? I'm sorry, kiddo, I really am. You have a good soul. And I hate giving good people bad news.
This scene got a lot of attention because of the dialogue. So, do you think you are the one? Honestly, I don't know. You know, being the one is just like being in love. No one can tell you you are in love. You just know it. And pretending to examine Neo, the oracle said, "You know what I'm going to tell you. I'm not the one. Sorry, kid. You got the gift, but it looks like you're waiting for something. What? Your next life, maybe, who knows?" This is the interesting part of the story. It leaves the audience hanging. Is Neo the one or not? It looks like he is. Morpheus obviously thinks that he is the one. But Neo himself is not so sure. The movie draws out our deep longing to find our true purpose, to break out of our mold, to be our true self. So people like it. People like the movie. For example, have you ever feel like being trapped in a matrix? You wonder if what you see, what you hear, what you feel, what you think is all there is. You kind of realize that, you know, you are not what you consume. You are not what you buy. You are not what you own. There must be more to life than these. Something bigger, something better, something livelier is out there. You just don't know what it is, and you don't know how to get it. You don't know how to receive it. Every now and then, things clear up a little bit. You seem to have a window of clarity. Maybe you've talked to someone. You heard a song. You attended a conference. You read a book. You have insights. You are on the verge of a breakthrough. Just one decision and your life will be changed forever. But you hesitate. You wait, and you step back, and then the blinds are closed, the moment is gone, things got back to normal, and you are distracted by a thousand things, and you are back into your comfort zone. But the call would come again, gently inviting you to step out, to become a believer, to join the alliance, to join the adventure, to join the resistance, to join the kingdom, to join the movement. And it almost have you convinced, except for this one little question that you can't quite shake off. How do I know? How do I know for sure? How do I know that I'm going to be fine? That I can make it? That I am the one? So The Matrix is a good movie because it has something for everyone, especially for people who feel stuck, people who are confused and afraid, and people who are lost. It asks the important questions, and it draws us into a quest for answers. So this morning, we will join the quest. I will wreck your mind a little bit, but we will look at a Matrix story in the Bible and see how one person made it out and found her true identity. The story happens about 2 centuries before the time of Gideon, our hero from the farm boy from last week. There lived a woman called Rahab in the city of Jericho. Jericho was thought to be an extremely well-protected city, perhaps the best, perhaps the greatest stronghold in the region of Canaan. And rumor has it that a great multitude of people, the Israelites, was gathering across the Jordan on the east side of the river, and they are here for conquest. If the Israelites could cross the Jordan River, the next stop would be Jericho, and they would take the city and they would move into Canaan. People believe that the safest place to hide is inside the city because it is almost impossible for any army to breach the walls of Jericho. So while the people in the vicinity are contacting relatives, trying to arrange for a place to stay in the city, Rahab was desperately trying to get out. For she has heard stories about the Israelites. Specifically, she has heard stories about their God, how Yahweh has sent plagues to the Egyptians, to a point even Pharaoh had to concede and let the Israelites go. She has heard how Yahweh had divided the Red Sea and let his people cross on dry ground, how Yahweh has provided for his people in the wilderness for over 40 years, how Yahweh had defeated 2 kings who were much stronger than the Israelites. She had heard all these stories, and there's no doubt in her mind that the Israelites would cross the Jordan River, and it's just a matter of time. She knows that Jericho won't stand a chance against Yahweh, and she is living in a war zone. She is on the wrong side of the war. The safest place to stay right now is not behind the walls of Jericho, but out there in the camps with the Israelites. She had thought about escaping, defecting. She could become an informant. But her parents, her brothers and sisters, her in-laws and her nephews, they are all in the city. How can she leave them behind? And there is a bigger problem. Rahab is Canaanite. She is a woman. Why would the Israelite receive her? And she is poor. She can't even offer a bribe. And worse yet, she is a prostitute. She has no honor. She has no credibility. No one would trust her. Rahab must have thought about this 1,000 times, but she feels absolutely stuck. There is no way out. One evening, 2 strangers walked on her street and knocked on her door. She opened the door and saw 2 men. Without saying a word, they signaled for her that they needed a place to stay. Obviously, these are not local guys. One of them passed her a bag of money. Wow, it's heavy. It's a lot of money. So she let them in. They immediately shut the door. And under the light, she could definitely tell that these are not Canaanites. Are you guys from the east? Do you live across the Jordan? Rahab was testing them. One guy told her to hush while the other guy checking the place. I do have a place to hide if that's what you need. Intuitively, she knew already that these are Israelites, and judging from their apprehension, they must be in some kind of trouble. So Rahab took them up to the roof, and it was harvest time. And in those days, people would spread out their crops on the roof to be dried by the sun. And Rahab's roof was completely covered with stalks of flax, just the perfect place to hide. And as soon as the man came up the roof, there are noises on the street. Soldiers with torches were approaching. And she quickly went down and hid the money bag. And someone was pounding on her door already, royal guards from the palace. Rahab took a deep breath. She opened the door. Soldier came in and searched the house. And they took their time, but they couldn't find anything. So the captain of the guard said to Rahab, and he said, "Men have arrived tonight to spy out the city. They seem to have entered this house. Now, do you have any idea where these men come from, Miss Rahab?" "These are Israelites from across the Jordan. They are spies. Now, it would please the king if you could tell us their whereabouts, and I will make sure that you receive a reward." Rahab had never expected the choice to come so suddenly. Blue pill, red pill. Take the blue pill and you wake up your old way of life. And take the red pill, who knows what this may, if this is leading her. All she knew was that it might cost her everything. So in a split second, Rahab gathered her strength and she picked the red pill. "Yes, two men did come to me, but I didn't know where they come from. At dark, when the gate was about to be shut, the men left. But I had no idea where they went. Hurry up. Chase them. You can still catch them." Well, I guess she must be a better liar than I am. The men pursued after the Israelites on the way to the Jordan as far as the forts, and the gate was shut as soon as the pursuer had gone out. So Rahab closed the door behind her. She stared at the roof. The house was completely quiet, and thoughts came rushing through her mind. Refugees are flooding into the city. The marketplace is running out of food. She seems to be the only person who wants to get out. But she believes that the Israelites will cross the Jordan, they will besiege the city, they will breach the wall, and they will capture the city because Yahweh is on their side. Now the men on the roof are her ticket out of the matrix. This is her only chance. This is her one chance to save her entire family. So what she must do now is to climb up there and cut a deal. So that's what she did. She came up on the roof and said to the men, "Now I know that the Lord has given you the land and that the fear of you have fallen upon us. All the inhabitants of the land melt away before you, for we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of Amorites beyond the Jordan, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in man because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heavens above and on earth below. Now then, swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." The two men couldn't believe what they are hearing. Here is a Canaanite woman whom they have never met. And this woman had risked her own life and her family to save them. But not only that, she had told them exactly what they have come here to observe. The situation in the city, the mood of the people, and everything was telling them that the Canaanites were afraid. They were afraid of the Israelites. No, they were afraid of Yahweh. This was music to their ears, as though God was testifying to them, see, didn't I tell you to be strong and courageous? Didn't I tell you that no one would be able to stand before you? For the two men, what just happened just now was surreal. This Canaanite woman was like a prophet from God. So the man said to her, our life for yours even to death. So if you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us this land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. So Rahab got her deal. Now she must make sure that these men can return safely, because the whole city is on alert. Guards are everywhere. The gates were closed. There was only one way out. So she ran downstairs, came back up with a rope, and then she let them down through the window. For her house was built into the city wall, and she was living in the wall. And she said to them, go to the hills. Don't let those people catch you. Hide there for 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterwards you may go your way. And the man said to her, behold, when we came into this land, the day we came, when we come to this land, make sure that you shall tie this scarlet cord in your window through which you let us down. And you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers and sisters, and all your father's household. If anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear. And she said, according to your words, so be it. Then she sent them away, and they departed. Rahab has risked the lives of her household to protect these spies. For what? For a belief that the Israelites will cross the Jordan River. For a belief that they will besiege Jericho, that they will breach the city wall, and they will capture the city. How does she know? I don't know. She just has this conviction that the Lord has given you this land. The Lord has given the land to the Israelites. Rahab was convinced that Yahweh is the God of the heavens and the earth. Nobody could tell her otherwise. While everybody else are trying to enter the city, she is desperately trying to get out. Everyone is banking on the walls of Jericho. And she is banking everything on Yahweh, the God of Israel. And there is only one more thing for her to do. She tied the scarlet cord in the window. She packs her things and prepares her family to go. And herein lies the central point of the sermon. Faith is putting belief into actions. Faith is putting beliefs into actions. A lot of Christians think that faith and belief is the same thing, but they are not the same. It is true that belief is a necessary ingredient of faith, because without belief, there is no faith. But belief by itself is not faith. For example, we believe that God can call the weakest and the least, right? God called Gideon. God calls us. God calls you. God called me. We've heard about the concept. But until we respond to the call, we have no faith. We believe that when God calls, his presence will be with us. We like the concept, God with us. But until we lean on his presence, we have no faith. And we believe that God will guide, right? God will guide his servants through baby steps. We buy the concept. But until we actually take one step of faith, there is no faith. Faith is not just hearing the gospel, understanding the theology, or believing the doctrines. As important as it is to hear, to understand, to believe, they will not amount to anything unless they are supported by an act of faith. Faith is putting belief into actions. Take Rahab as an example. This is a Canaanite woman, a prostitute who lives on the wrong side of the war. And she believes that the Israelites will win this war. The God of Israel is stronger than the walls of Jericho. So she is stuck in the matrix. And then one day spies came in, show up at her door. So what is she going to do? She made a choice. Faith is putting belief into action, right? So what actions did she take? She let them into her house, right? And then she took them on the roof, and she hid them under the stalks of flax. She sent the guards away on a wild goose chase. She made a covenant with the spies. She lowered them down the wall. She pointed them away from the pursuers, and she tied the scarlet cord on her window. All in a belief that Yahweh is stronger than the walls of Jericho. Faith is putting that belief into actions. And if we turn the table around, okay, let's just turn the table around, the same is true for the Israelites. The spies were saved by a woman they did not know. And the woman said, go into the hills, hide there for 3 days. What did they do? They departed, they went into the hills, they remained there for 3 days until the pursuers are gone. And the pursuers searched all along the way and found nothing. Then the two men returned to the Israel camps. They came down from the hills and passed over the Jordan. They came to Joshua and they told all that had happened to them. And they said, guys, you can't believe what has happened to us across the river. We met this Canaanite woman in Jericho, and she's a prostitute. But that's not the point. She told us this. Truly the Lord has given all the land into our hands, and all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us. So let's do it, guys. We can win this war. Wait a second. Whom did you meet at Jericho again? A Canaanite woman, a prostitute, and she told you all these? No, but she saved our lives. She had risked her own life to protect us. And she told us the Lord has given us this land. It's like God has sent us into Jericho just to meet this woman. It can't be a coincidence. The Lord has arranged the meeting himself. I'm telling you, she is a prophet. She is the oracle. And I want you to listen to what is happening next. Joshua 3, verse 1. Then Joshua rose early in the morning. And they set out. And they came to the Jordan. He and all the people of Israel. And they lodged there, getting ready to pass over. Church, that's faith. That's putting belief into actions. And you know the rest of the story. The water of the Jordan was cut off from upstream during a flood season. The Lord stretched out his hand to block the water from upstream, and the people passed over on dry ground. And they marched toward Jericho. They circled the city 7 days in a row, just as they've been told. And on the seventh day, they blew the trumpets. The walls crumbled. And the Israelites took the city without shooting an arrow. So the young man who had been spies went in. They brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brothers and her sisters and all who belonged to her. And they brought her, all her relatives, and put them outside the camp of Israel. And they burned the city with fire and everything in it. But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day. the thing that excites me the most is how God is mediating all this together. He led the Israelites to Rahab's house, and Rahab told them what they had exactly need to hear, and she saved their lives and helped them escape. And because of her testimony, the Israelites were strengthened. They attacked and captured the city, and they in turn saved Rahab and her household. So did you see how divine providence and human faith was working so perfectly together in this story? This is how God works, and this is how faith works. From the Old Testament to the New, the theme of putting one's belief into actions has been stressed over and over again. The Apostle James taught passionately in his letter. James said, "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him?" You see, faith by itself, belief by itself, if it does not have works, if it is not accompanied by actions, it's dead. You believe God is one, right? You believe that he exists. You believe that God is the ruler of the universe. So what? Big deal. Okay? Even the demons believe and shudder. They tremble in great fear. You see, you are not the only one who believes. Demons believe in God too. And it's just that they do nothing about it. Do you want to be shown, you foolish person, that faith apart from works is useless? Was not Abraham, our father, justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see how his faith was active along with his works? And faith, his faith was completed by his works. And for that, he was called a friend of God. So you see that a person is justified by his works, not by faith alone. I know some Christians is going to say, well, this is Abraham, man. He is the father of faith, right? Of course, his faith is perfect. Of course, his faith is completed by his works. Me, I'm just a nobody, right? I'll never be as strong or as good as Abraham. Well, guess who James is calling to the witness stand? In the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, also faith apart from works is dead. From Abraham, the father of faith, to Rahab, the prostitute, right? Rahab was not even an Israelite. She was just a Canaanite woman, a prostitute. She shouldn't even be mentioned in the Bible. The Bible is a holy book, okay? From Abraham, the father of faith, to Rahab, the prostitute, from the greatest to the least, the principle of faith is the same. Faith apart from works is dead. In other words, a belief that is not producing actions is useless. It is no faith at all. The reason why I have taken so much time to explain such a simple concept, such a simple point, is this. Because some of us have been living in the matrix for too long. We get comfortable with our daily routines. We get comfortable with our jobs, with our friends, our smartphones, our cars, our shopping list, our food, our vacations. And we indulge ourselves in these things. Yeah, we come to church. We sit here every Sunday. We listen to sermons. We understand. We agree and we believe. But we forget that we have been called to action. We forget that we are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people of God's own possession, that we may proclaim the excellencies of Him who called us out of darkness into His marvelous light. We forget that we have been called to exit the matrix, to enter into abundant life. Right? We have a message to proclaim. We have a duty to help others. We have an honor to serve God. And we have a hope to receive the crown. We are a chosen race. We are a royal priesthood. We are a holy nation, meaning we don't belong to the matrix. We are God's possession because we are God's sons and daughters. So how can we settle for being a nobody, living an average life, waiting something to come along to stimulate us every day? And meanwhile, the words of the oracle echoes in the matrix. Sorry, kid, you got the gift, but it looks like you are waiting for something. What? Your next life, maybe? Who knows? What are we waiting for? What are you waiting for? A proof? Some kind of confirmation? A special word from God? Are you waiting for Him to speak? But He already has. And listen, the confirmation will come. The proof will come. Salvation will come. Victory will come. But you need to tie that cord, that scarlet cord, to your window first. You need to put your belief into actions. And you will know for sure. You will experience how divine providence and human faith can be working together in perfect harmony. So will you put the scarlet cord on your window today?